This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
Imagine a world where the boy who plays the pipe organ is the coolest kid in high school. Well, that's pretty much the way it is in Fall City, Nebraska. Join us and find out why the teenage organist you'll meet from there today is so admired. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. We're at the Plaza Theater in El Paso, Texas, where we'll also hear an 11-year-old harpist perform the music of Reinhold Glier. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Special thanks to the El Paso Summer Music Festival for bringing us back to this classic border town on the banks of the Rio Grande. You can feel the influence of neighboring Mexico even inside this theater, built in Spanish colonial revival style. The Plaza was a grand movie house that was also designed to present vaudeville and burlesque shows. Like many similar theaters built in the late 1920s and 30s, its construction included the installation of a theater organ meant to accompany silent films. Many of these organs have since disappeared, but here they've meticulously maintained their mighty Wurlitzer. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear a wonderfully grandiose piece suitable for the king of instruments, performed by the teenage organist Joanne just mentioned. But we're going to kick things off with an outstanding 13-year-old clarinetist we've brought to Texas from Culver City, California. Please welcome Andrew Moses. Andrew, we're going to play a concertino by Carl Maria von Weber. I often think about him as sort of the rah-rah cheerleader composer of the classical music world, but I guess you take issue with people overemphasizing that cheery aspect of his music.
Yes. First of all, I think Weber is a composer not many people know the name of. He's primarily known for his compositions for opera. But what's so great, I think, is his other compositions are written for instruments like the clarinet, like he writes for the voice. And so it's so much fun for me being able to sing through my clarinet. And I think the introduction of this piece has this longing feeling in it. It's so emotional, and it's such a great piece.
Well, I'm looking forward to playing this together. When you're set, we'll take it from the top.
Thank you.
Andrew Moses, 13 years old, our clarinetist from Culver City, California, playing Weber's Concertino, Opus 26. Andrew is one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Well, Andrew, I stand corrected. That was deep as anything out of Mahler or Brahms, absolutely, in your
Thank
generous
you.
And warm-hearted sound.
Thank
Just
you
wonderful
so
playing
much.
That with you. Andrew, when we spoke to you before coming on the program, you pointed out something kind of funny that unifies your musical interests.
Yes, I actually have three different C words that I'd use. Clarinet, composing, and conducting.
Very good. We'll start with the clarinet, of course. I know your dad's a saxophonist and your mom is a voice teacher. Was it sort of an automatic that you'd leap into lessons and serious practicing at a young age?
No, well, actually, my parents have been so supportive. I actually started out with just loose lessons every few weeks, and I started out in the blues just to get to enjoy the instrument. And
so no scales and exercises?
Not much.
Woe is me, I'm a toddler. So your roots are in the blues. That's good. Mm-hmm. Those Culver City blues. I imagine life is really hard out there in California. Yeah. So your classical music family wasn't particularly aggressive about starting you out playing, but they were the inspiration for your second C, composing. Am I right?
Yes. I had this desire just to express music through a different medium, and so I chose composing. And especially, though, to write for my family. We're all musicians, so I composed pieces for us to play together. It was a great experience.
So your dad, your mom, and I guess your sister's a violinist.
Yeah, she played violin.
Wow, so good for you. The family that plays together stays together, I guess. And what about conducting? How did that come about?
Oh, well, I used to get my dad's old conducting baton, go in my room, stand on top of my chair like a podium, and crank up Beethoven's Seventh Symphony and go at it. It was a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. You've actually become the assistant conductor of your youth orchestra. That's pretty amazing at the age of 13. What sorts of things have you been doing with your conducting?
I've been conducting the rehearsals for the wind ensemble of my youth orchestra. And the conductor of my youth orchestra has given me conducting lessons, which have been amazing.
Well, that's really hands-on training. That's wonderful. Mm. Very generous of your conducting teacher. So we've been talking about the three C's in your life, but I'd like to suggest that there's really a fourth C, and that would stand for carts. You do a really generous thing with pull carts back in California.
Yes. Los Angeles is home to the largest population of homeless people in the United States, and poverty is something that's often ignored, which breaks my heart. And so I've been challenged just to treat those who are homeless with compassion and with value and the most practical ways. And so a group I'm a part of, we make these carts, which we call Mercy Street carts. They're basically a bicycle we get donated to us. We refurbish it, and then we attach a bicycle trailer to it with a big tub on the back, which we fill with supplies that we hope will help them meet their needs living in the streets of Los Angeles.
Wow. Gosh, Andrew, it sounds like the generosity. It sounds like the generosity of spirit in your clarinet playing is borne out by your actions as a human being. So
Thank
we really
you.
Applaud you for that, and great having your spirit on board with us to start things off.
Thank you.
Very much,
it's an
Andrew.
Honor.
Thank you. Andrew Moses, 13 years old from Culver City, California.
Andrew is unbelievably expressive when he plays. You can see him in action at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Now it's time to hear the mighty Wurlitzer organ here at the Plaza Theater, the Weiler Wurlitzer organ. We mentioned earlier in the show, and to play this fantastic instrument, we've got a terrific organist from Falls City, Nebraska, 19-year-old David Von Baron. David, tell everyone what you're going to play for us.
Tonight I'm going to be playing the Toccata from the Suite Gothique by Leon Bowman.
Now, Stravinsky famously called the organ the monster that never breathes. But you actually visualize a monster when you play this piece, don't you?
Actually, yes, I do. I visualize a very peaceful day on Lake Michigan, and then all of a sudden this sea monster comes out of nowhere. And it just keeps getting bigger. You don't realize how long the sea monster actually is until finally, at the very end of the piece, Chuck Norris comes out of nowhere and just slays the guy. So.
Thank God for Chuck Norris.
I know.
Now, we normally find, the organ music we associate oftentimes on the show is church music. I mean, Bach, Durfle, Vidor, but yeah. You chose this piece particularly for the theater organ. What is it, the quality of the instrument or the sort of the grandiose quality?
Well, the Wurlitzer obviously is known as a theater organ, like you said. The piece I'm going to be playing, the Bullman Toccata, I wouldn't say that the piece is hokey, but it's definitely cheesy, which is perfect for this instrument. So I'm really excited to play it.
Well, we've got to have all the bells and whistles to accompany the silent films here at the Plaza,
yes.
I guess. So I want to mention that as in Bach's time when organists had young assistants to pull stops as they played, we've got Graham Davis, the caretaker of the mighty Wurlitzer, to assist David with some of the changes in sound we'll be hearing. Okay, let her rip.
Thank you.
David von Baron, 19 years old, our organist from Falls City, Nebraska, performing the toccata from Leon Bowman's Suite Gothique on the Weiler Mighty Wurlitzer organ here at the Plaza Theater in El Paso, Texas. David is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists.
Well, yeah, I love that C major Chuck Norris chord there at the end.
Gotta love Chuck Norris.
I really, really love the sea monster image. I totally felt that. You know, we had that. You know, it has that theater. You know, theater organ sound that's just so luscious. We want to see the film behind it.
Yes.
So, yeah. So we'll wait for your version of Godzilla to come out.
Okay.
David, when you play like that, you're going a long way towards your goal as an organist. Talk about that.
My goal as an organist is to bring so many more people, more audiences, and make them familiar with the organ. The organ, the majesty behind it, is a constant reminder to me that, you know, there is a God for me, and it brings others closer to their faith as well. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to be able to bring the organ not only in churches but to concert halls and show people the majesty of the savage beast.
Absolutely. It's the blood rushing. We'll look forward to your career burgeoning in future years, but in the meantime, you lead an amazingly balanced life at your high school. Well, balanced, but also hard to balance. What all are you involved in this year?
Well, I like to run, so I do cross-country and track, and I like band. I do student council, National Honor Society, one act, and I like duet acting on speech team, and I really, really like show choir also.
Oh, so like Glee, right?
Well, yeah, kind of.
I understand as a senior, this was a very, very good year for you.
Yeah, at Falls City High School this year, we went in with the attitude that we'd like to work hard and win some competitions. And one of the competitions that was our toughest competition, we came in second this year. So it was a really exciting year.
Big year. Well, there's one thing you didn't mention about your activities this year. Joanne, please make the presentation.
On our show, we've had a beauty queen harpist with a black belt in karate, a flutist who can bench press 250 pounds, and we've even had a pianist with decent social skills.
Hey.
But we've never, ever had a classically trained organist who was, what were you, David?
Homecoming king.
Did you hear that, people? That's right. A guy who plays the pipe organ and spends most of his Saturday nights practicing, that guy was homecoming king. David, I'm pleased to announce that you're the From the Top Stereotype Smasher of the Year.
Wow, congratulations, David. Usually it's the captain of the football team or something. How great an organist gets to be homecoming king. I think that's fantastic. It sounds like you really go to a great school. I mean, it sounds like fitting in as a classical musician is not a real stretch. Tell everybody about the community that makes up Falls City High.
Falls City High School is everybody has their own niches. Like, we have really good football players and softball players, and it's so nice that everybody's been really extremely supportive and kind in the school and the community as well. I feel I've been very fortunate to live in such a great community and go to a nice school. Like
great
that.
Place to grow up. Well, David, we can't wait to see what the future holds for you, and we look forward to hearing and seeing you again sometime soon.
Thanks so much.
All the best
Chris.
To you, David. Thanks for being
Thank
with us.
Thank you.
David von Baron, 19 years old, our organist from Falls City, Nebraska, off to the Cleveland Institute of Music. Yes, we've had a harpist with a black belt in karate, but now meet an even cooler harpist, an 11-year-old who won the junior division of the American Harp Society National Competition, and she writes her own fables. From Arvada, Colorado, this is Lucy Sotak. Lucy, welcome. So you write fables about birds. Why birds?
Well, I just really like birds.
You like birds. I like birds, too. Do you have a favorite bird?
Yes, my favorite bird is the American crow. Now, most people don't really like crows, but I like them because they're intelligent and it's on the inside what counts.
There's one crow that you like so much you named him.
Yes, I named him Connor.
Oh, that's sweet. I bet you even know the Latin term for the crow.
Yes, Corvus Bracarincos.
Easy for you to say. Okay, thank goodness. And do you give lots of birds names?
Yes, the birds that I see around the backyard, I name Fred and Matilda Flicker, Frank and Julia Downey, Tristan Finch, and Chuck Chickadee.
Nice. How about some of the not-so-favorite birds? Do you give them names, too?
Yes, there's Annoying and Stinky Starling.
Yes, indeed. Can you give us a short synopsis of one of your fables?
I read an interesting fact in a canary book that said that if you give a canary a mirror, he will stare at himself instead of eat. So that reminded me of the myth of Narcissus, so I made a bird fable. Well, there is this canary named Julian who had a mirror put into his cage, and he looked at himself all day instead of eating, so he began to starve. Then this other canary named Juliana came into his cage, and she told him, why are you looking into that mirror all the time? You have to eat. And he said, no, I don't want to. So she broke his mirror, and he got better. And the moral of the story is sometimes friends need to use tough love.
That's right. Lucy, so I guess the other part of it is that Juliana just didn't want him admiring himself. She wanted him to admire her, huh? So do they have a family at the end and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. So do you hear any bird calls in this piece you're about to play?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, tell everyone what you're going to play.
I'm going to play Impromptu for Harp by Reinhold Lier.
Thank you.
Lucy Sotak, our 11-year-old harpist from Arvada, Colorado, playing Reinhold Gruyere's Impromptu.
As we say at the top of every show, From the Top celebrates the power of music in the hands of America's kids. But did you know our radio show is just one of the many ways From the Top does that? Learn about our nationwide education and outreach efforts at fromthetop.org.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music, online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from the Plaza Theater in El Paso, Texas. Coming up, a two-piano spectacular as two teenagers tackle Ludoslavsky's Variations on a Theme by Paganini. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Today's show is made possible with support from the El Paso Museum and Cultural Affairs Department, the Texas Commission on the Arts, and the El Paso Community Foundation. Special thanks to the University of Texas at El Paso Music Department and KTEP 88.5 FM.
I absolutely love fast things. Anything fast, it's greater. The faster it is, the better. Cars, boats, spaceships, planes, everything. I just love them. My name is Wesley Yu. I'm a 17-year-old violinist from here in El Paso. So there's this really funny story about me when I was a baby. I already liked fast things when I was a few weeks old. And my parents would play me Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And I would cry during the slow sections. So my parents figured that out, and they would only play the fast parts, and I would fall asleep and be comfortable. And so my dad ended up editing a version of it where it was just like from summer to winter and then spring, just the fast parts. So it was just the speedy version of Four Seasons. Now, I still love fast music, just like the piece I'm about to play, the Polonaise Brillante by Henry Wieniawski. It's fast in a way that it plays around with the piano a lot, and that even gives it a better sense of just togetherness and playfulness. Thank you.
Leslie Yu, our violinist, 17 years old, from here in El Paso, and the 2010 winner of the El Paso Summer Music Festival's Young Musician Concerto Competition, performing the Polonaise Brilliant by Henryk Wieniawski. Well, Wesley, that's a load off. I figured it was a foregone conclusion you were going to finish before me. Thank you. Thank you for playing so nicely with me. I thought I was going to play the first two measures of the introduction, and he'd say, I'm done. Before you played, you mentioned fast spaceships, and I guess you're actually interested in aerospace engineering. Do you see yourself as an astronaut?
Yeah, that would be cool, but I'm more interested in being like a flight director or a designer. I want to minimize the risk of space travel and, you know, make it accessible and affordable for everyone.
Oh, sounds good. All right. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, speaking of getting us all into space, I love your dream about performing concerts in space. Mm-hmm. How about the violin? How would that work in space?
That would be kind of difficult. I mean, it's pretty dependent on gravity, and I don't know how I'd do that, but...
Have to force the bow onto the string. Yeah. But the up-bow staccatos, I imagine, would be quite nice. How about the piano? Is the piano going to work in space?
I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, I was like, oh, maybe I could put magnets on the mallet or something, simulate gravity with force. And, you know, that'd be the thing to think about. But.
Seems sort of complicated. I'd just take my Casio up there. I like
there's no challenge to that. I want acoustic.
Okay, very good. Go all acoustic. Yep. Well, your dreams about rocket-fast travel into space and your interest in rocket-fast classical music made us want to give you a rocket-fast quiz with questions all about speed in music. Are you up for a little quiz?
Can you be quick about it?
Uh-huh. I think we can oblige. Joanne?
Okay, let's talk tempo markings. Which is faster, an allegro or an allegretto?
Allegro.
Correct. Allegro, the suffix etto actually means a slight reduction, a lessening of the tempo in question. So an allegretto is slightly less fast than an allegro. On the other end of the tempo spectrum, a larghetto is actually a little less slow than a largo. Very confusing. Next question.
Okay, here's a question in honor of the 100th anniversary of the premiere of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. The man who conducted that famous and notorious premiere in Paris in 1913 was Pierre Monteau. Now, which of the following is true about Monteau's tempo for the famous last sequence, The Sacrificial Dance? A, Monteau conducted it much faster than Stravinsky intended, and they didn't speak for 15 years. B, Monteau conducted it much faster than Stravinsky intended, and Stravinsky loved it. Or C, Monteau didn't conduct it nearly as fast as Stravinsky wanted.
Well, that's pretty specific. Let's see. I'm going to go with C, because C's always the correct answer.
Exactly. Stravinsky was such a control freak. Given the player piano role Stravinsky himself supervised, as well as his behavior at the dancers' rehearsals for the first production, there's strong evidence that Stravinsky wanted the tempo quite a bit faster than Monteau conducted it. Here's Monteau conducting a recording of The Sacrificial Dance. Well, respectable enough, but in 1990, the Boston Philharmonic, under the direction of Maestro Benjamin Zander, was the first orchestra to attempt a recording of the piece at the ferocious tempi of the piano rolls. Much more to your liking, I'm imagining, yeah. Wesley. Yes,
so
of course.
Much better.
Okay, Joanne, make the last question snappy.
Okay. In order for a conductor to properly conduct an accelerando, she must, A, make her strokes smaller as the tempo increases, B, make her strokes grander as the tempo increases, or C, make her strokes more angular and desperate while whispering in panic, accelerando, accelerando.
C, that sounds fun.
Really?
Yeah.
It's probably how Kurt Mazur would say, you know, no, we did it much faster in rehearsal. Actually, no, the answer is A. You want to make smaller movements, you know, more quick. Thanks for your speedy answers to our quiz questions and for making quick work of the Wieniawski. Thank you, Wesley.
Thank you for having me.
Wesley Yu, 17 years old, our violinist from here in El Paso.
Podcasts from the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
We've rolled a second Steinway Grand onto the stage here at the Plaza Theater for the duo piano finale of our show. And on stage with me to play it are two terrific teenage pianists from the Idlewild Arts Academy in Idlewild, California. They are Julian Jensen from Hemet, California, and Wutitorn Chintamit from Bangkok, Thailand. Both are 17 years old. Wutitorn is, luckily for me, known to his friends here in America by his nickname, In. Because they're such good friends, they've combined their first names to call themselves the Jin Twins. They're coached at the school by Nelms McIlvain and Doug Ashcraft. In, you're boarding at the Idlewild Arts Academy halfway across the globe from your home. But you joke that since you come to the United States, your parents actually worry about you less. Why is that?
Because in Thailand, like, my parents, they want me to, like, study, like, math, science, like, and they tend to limit my practice time. But when I come to America, like, they don't know how much I practice.
So you can get away with all that terrible piano practicing without your parents butting in. As I mentioned, you two have become very close friends, but I guess that you found that collaborating as pianists isn't always easy. What's it like, Julian?
You know, the best thing about In, which is also the worst thing, is that he will question every word that comes out of my mouth. Except that.
That's true.
He actually agreed with you.
I agree. Nice. Okay, so I'll...
what sorts of things do you disagree on, you guys?
Well, when it comes to music, certainly we'll disagree on many elements of our piece, whether it be articulation, phrasing, and...
Pedaling is always a big sticking point with pianists, I find. Do you find hard times dealing with that?
Yes, although that we've... What I've noticed is that cooperation and flexibility really help us to kind of get along, and also consulting with our teachers helps us kind of resolve these discussions we have. You know, compromise is really essential when you're doing two piano music or two piano forehand or any kind of collaborative work. It's especially true of two artists in the same field, in the same medium.
Very good. And working together, you've come to notice how much you actually differ in style as pianists. What sorts of things have you noticed? What sorts of the physical attitude that each of you have on the piano?
I noticed that he tend to use like more fingers, so he can get like the light touch. Mm-hmm. But I think if he use like the arm weight and then control it, like I think we would get the same thing. I don't know.
Yes. Well. You've talked about the joy of working together musically. What's been the good parts in about working together?
So we actually get to like experiment together. Because if I just do only my part and I do something, like, it wouldn't work as a group.
Yeah.
So. How does Julian, how does the time go by in rehearsal? Is it drudgery or does it fly by?
Well, you know, it's really fun because it provides us opportunities to ask each other questions and to argue, which we don't get to do just practicing solo by ourselves. Yeah. Practicing can be lonely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really fun to just rehearse like that and to discuss the finer aspects of the music.
Absolutely. The interaction is all to the best. Well, and I know that this experimentation and compromise has paid off. The performance that you give is lovely. Tell us what we're going to hear, Julian.
We are going to hear variations on a theme of Paganini as arranged by Witold Ludislawski in 1941 during the German occupation of Warsaw.
Okay, a powerhouse way to end our show. I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Julian and Inn, the Gin Twins, you can take it from the top.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.